2-minute set, and we're just like doing this nonstop, and we're just like going crazy.
I think we do it like 140 BPM.
That would be fucking dope. But anyways, as we do, this is our intros. Welcome back to the Bitcoin Weekly Kickback, gentlemen. Post Nashville, how the hell are you guys?
We survived. And I see everybody here on this pod was just like burning the midnight oil, both ends of the candle. I know everybody here did not waste any moments in Nashville. So when I did get to see you guys, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was funny because at describing Nashville, which is like the first big event of the week, early on in the day, I run into Donnie, who you can't miss him. And I'm trying to get coffee. And, like, we're in line, and there's this kind of, like, moment where it's, like, who's going first? Do you want to go? And he just jumps in, like, there's a spot, I'll go. And he pours me a coffee, like a gentleman, gives it to me, pours his own. And that's, like, I got to find out in that moment he has, like, a past life in hospitality, and he just, like, couldn't help himself. He just went back to his training.
It's, like, it's half that I really want to serve everybody and make sure things are efficient. And the other half is that I knew we were all just going to stand there waiting for someone who was no longer getting coffee. For like a long time, because they're having a conversation. You know, you get up to have coffee, and someone's like, "Oh my god, I haven't seen you in 5 years!" And then you're talking, and you're just in front of the coffee. We had to stop. You know,
I will say it was a good move too, because you don't have to like ask permission. You're just like, "I'm getting him a cup. It's for him." And then you take yours, and it's just like everyone's happy.
Like I didn't really think it through that far, but I just was like, "Coffee's open. I'm getting coffee." He was here first. I'm gonna get him the coffee. You know,
I'm taking that move.
I was just going to say, I always love running into Charlie, and I'm like, oh, hey, hi Charlie. Yeah, I always look up to you. Hey.
But that's my entire existence.
It's just talking to Charlie like you, I don't know, you like don't expect people to be, what, 6'4"?
I've kind of joked about this, but I feel like there should be some kind of like DID embedded to these chat apps, which give like some semblance of like the actual like who you're talking to. I don't know how you do that. It'd be great to have. Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. There's not. Aren't Bob? You're also like 6'2", aren't you?
6'2". Yeah.
Yeah, I look up to. Everyone here is taller than me. I mean, except Jacob.
Yeah, I'm gonna be up here for the rest of the episode.
You're taller than
what it feels like to look down on you guys, but no, it's funny when you get into like the metaverse apps, you have your height and your profile, and so you'll be playing like putt-putt golf, and you're like, oh, what's up, purple, whatever, and he'll be like, up here, and you start, and then you get a picture of like, oh, okay, this is what it's gonna feel like when I see you at the conference.
Mm. Yeah.
But anyway, let's do a quick recap of Nashville, because crazy event, so much went on, and I guess I'll briefly kick off. One of the big kind of like moments for me was seeing just how much Ordinals continues to push the Overton window, because like last year, Ordinals conference with Ragnar and them, like that was a great event, sold out, that was super cool. But like the main conference had no real Ordinals exposure and definitely not L2s, and now it's like Core DAO has a huge booth, BitLayer has a huge booth, Casey's on the main stage. So like the side events are still super high signal and dope, but the main conference is for sure being infiltrated by all things Ordinals and like more expansive Bitcoin. So that one continues to shock me.
Yeah, I would say like in terms of hierarchical narratives, there were many this year. Typically in my experience, there's like one or two narratives. But hierarchical, you have obviously the political narrative. Then I think maybe the ETF, the Michael Saylor narrative. But right after those two is Ordinals. And I put like layer twos equal with that. But Ordinals to me are much more interesting. And I was amazed. Like Ordinals are mainstream now. I think that's the big takeaway, is that they are top of mind in everybody in the Bitcoin ecosystem, from event organizers to capital deployment, that it is just now embedded in the Bitcoin narrative.
I don't know if I would say mainstream, but maybe growing.
Okay, yeah. I'll always be the guy to throw the Hail Mary and be out there, but Yeah.
I just chatted with a lot of people that actually didn't really know anything about ordinals. And so from like mainstream, like, I don't know. I mean, maybe definitely accelerating towards mainstream. But I don't think, like, if you did a poll at the Bitcoin conference, I'm going to guess 60%. Is that mainstream?
Yeah, I would say counterpoint, though. You talk to the Ordinals people, of whom probably comprise a quarter of the conference, and I think you'd be surprised how few Ordinals people are familiar with the heroes of the, like, his traditional Bitcoin narrative, the Saifedeens and the Preston Pishes, or the Robert Breedloves. Like, these are not names I ever hear spoken about in my Ordinals chats, who now represent... Yep. By conference attendance numbers, like a third, maybe.
Yep.
Donnie, thoughts?
A lot of thoughts. Cowboy boots and cowboy hats, real weird place, Nashville. You know, you always hear what's on the news about a place before you go there, and you're like, it's not going to be that, because the news only reports on this, like, very small segment of what actually happens. Like, what's in people's minds about a place is never true about Nashville. It's almost solely defined by party buses with cowboy hats, like chicks, like fucking, I'm sorry, it's just chicks like partying and falling off scooters. And it's a really weird dynamic. And we stayed in an Airbnb that was really close to Broadway. And a lot of my experience was just like I would go to the Bitcoin conference, and all the way there and all the way back, I would be like, what, where am I? This is such a weird place. Other than that, this was the busiest conference I think I've ever been to. And I don't know if it's because there was more stuff, but there was definitely more stuff that I wanted to go to. And I, to the point where I couldn't even physically be at a third of what I wanted to attend, as much as I tried to do that. And it was awesome. And the energy was high, and people are starting to, like, you know, in the early days of the Ordinals stuff, like describing Amsterdam last year, it was very obvious that everybody was there for the same reason with the same purpose, and there was like very little drama. I mean, I know there's drama coming from somewhere, or sometimes there's always drama because we're people, it's people like that, but there was like very little drama, and everybody was just like showing up and excited and doing stuff. And now people are starting to like segment off into cliques within Ordinals, which is a sort of counterintuitive to the way I live. Like, I don't like seeing that kind of stuff, but I think it's a really good sign, because the more people section off into these little subgroups, the more work gets done and the more competition that arrives. And I think generally speaking, that's a really good sign, despite being kind of, like I said, not my favorite thing. Bullish, just in general, everything. And Donald,
yeah, I was going to second.
Super funny. Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
Oh, no, you can finish.
Last thing, Donald Trump's opening line. You got on the stage an hour and a half late. We tried to go there late to miss the crowd, and we did because everybody was seated already, just kind of like waiting to see him speak. And he gets on stage after like 2 hours of late, and he goes, "The Secret Service asked me if they could have an extra hour to prepare. I said, to call the time you need."
Dude launched into a comedy routine. That was funny. A very funny talk, honestly.
David Bailey's handsome. Not too handsome. Kind of handsome.
You're going to have too much electricity. Yeah, the electricity coming out your ears. You're going to be begging me for it to stop giving it. Yeah, whatever. Like, it was good. Yeah, so now Donald Trump's Italian, but like, banger after comedy banger of a speech. I mean, okay, contents, whatever. Don't like the guy, but it's a funny speech.
It was good.
I'm going to second a lot of Donnie's points around the growth at the conference from a side event perspective, from people trying to get attention. You know, we get a lot of interest into Bitcoin with Ordinals, and we get a lot of builders, and we start getting more VC money. So we start having companies trying to get more user attention. I think this is just going to accelerate in the next year, where you have all of these L2s with kind of the same goal, and that's acquire as much liquidity, developers, and users as possible. And the only way you do that is by building, you know, fantastic user experience, have great developer docs, great, you know, developer relations, and marketing. And a lot of that is events. And so with more money at events, you're naturally going to see more and more happening at these big Bitcoin events, to the point where you will have, you know, the L2 space, even specific L2s as ecosystems. you'll start to have big applications beyond those building on Bitcoin L1. Like you'll have, you know, the biggest couple of apps on Bob or on Merlin or on BitLayer or on Botanix or others that will start having a presence as well. And then you kind of have to pick your ecosystem. And so a lot of people were complaining like, man, I wish I could have done more and gone to everything. But in reality, the ecosystem is just growing and you're going to have to pick and choose which crowd you kind of want to be a part of and who you want to see. And so that's, yeah.
I heard someone, like a longtime Bitcoin conference attendee, say or reflect something to the tune of that they felt that the conference was foreign to them this year, that there were a lot of different things that they didn't recognize. And my response to that was, to me, this is great because one of the strengths of Bitcoin is for there to be entire categories in it that you are not familiar with. That is one of the natural progressions of true decentralization where the different parts are not even fully aware of the whole. So, I mean, that to me, I was like, it is the best thing in the world, and you should hope that there are that half the conference is stuff you've never heard of before, but that you find interesting. That's like the ideal scenario.
Yeah.
Yep. Could not agree more. The one that caught me off guard was seeing how big the mining stage and the mining area of the Expo Center was. And maybe I was more tuned into it. Dude, and like, I just finished reading the Bitcoin Miner's Almanac, which everyone should read, especially because if you're just like a normie, it's so accessible. And it really makes this really strong case that like, one, how the electricity grid works, which I just turn lights on, like it just works. But like, there's so much complexity of like trying to spin up new energy, but then have it not go anywhere. So how do you monetize that? Either first buyer or last buyer. And so I'm like, okay, cool. This book is dope. And then I go in and I'm like, oh my God, like this stage over here is just massive and it's popping. And then you walk through and there's like giant fans that can like chop your arm off. And there's like big ass containers. And I think I heard some stat that the Bitcoin mining industry now is $12 billion a year. And that's just a big fucking number. So I didn't know it. Bitcoin mining is one of those things that gets talked about on like the centralization side, like pools and all that. But the rest of it is just kind of like they do their thing in kind of the real world. It doesn't really touch enough unless you listen to Blockspace or come on here.
This is what I've been saying for so long, is that it's really hard for the people who think about Bitcoin as a network and as a code base and as a culture to really understand that the miners exist in an entirely different information ecosystem. They look at those containers, the giant IntelliFlex, you know, cooler on top, like, you know, skid-mounted package system. That's their world. They deal in transforming voltages from up here to down here and, like, these giant power agreements. Like, I go through that part of the conference, and I'm very familiar because I've done business with a lot of these people and talked to a lot of these folks. But and those people don't think about Bitcoin as a code base. And this is, you get to, I really like for Ordinal Zesians to go and like try to follow the mining conversation just because it's going to feel really foreign to you because it's just a bunch of words and terms and a lot more like real names of people doing this and a lot of like real business entities talking about things. So like, I just think that's really interesting. And I like to see people get a hands-on experience for that.
Yep. Because, yeah, Donnie, you mentioned, like, there's these clicks, and, like, there for sure are, but it's also, like, the Bitcoin's a huge, like, octopus, and the tentacles go far and deep. And that's what's crazy, is, like, there's so much expertise, and like, you can go just into Bitcoin mining and get lost forever. Like, I was talking to ChatGPT last night and asking about, like, how... Well, somebody posted something about, like, solar versus wind. I'm like, okay, cool, that's interesting. And then you learn about, like, at 100 meters, this is how much wind you can get across the country. But if you double that, it gets way, way, way better. So there's all these topics of, like, the higher you can go in the air, the better. Or if you can go out in the ocean and do, like, a hydro platform thing, that's good. But then how do you get, like, a mine out there to access it and, like, have it be self? Like, all these questions are super deep. And that's just one click. That's just one tentacle.
Exactly. I was glad they let me and some miners talk about ordinals on the mining stage. Notably, Because I check in with, you know, your token Bitcoin miners to talk about ordinals every now and then. And there's been a reluctance to come out hard on the side of Opcat. And it's been pretty neutral for a while. And this was the first time on the mining stage where all of the miners from major former VP of mining at Galaxy to CEO of a public company to chief research officer at a major prominent company to all say they are pro Opcat as individuals. So I thought that was very, very notable. I would still say 90 to 95% of the mining industry and mining mindshare neutral or totally ignorant about the topic. But I do think that was a very seminal moment where you had a lot of the thought leaders feel comfortable demonstrating opinion, which was somewhat informed on the topic, and so much as you can still be informed on an opcode, which is barely researched.
What was the general sentiment around the positive feelings towards that? Like, why did they move from anti to pro, if they did?
I mean, Jake and Bob can talk about this, but there's more implementations. There's more people talking about it. A lot of us just look at what the smart people around us say and get a vibe check from them. And there's a little more confidence and comfort from the developer landscape around the topic. There used to be a lot more segmentation, everybody having their favorite opcode, to now a lot of unifying under the Opcat wide umbrella, saying that a lot of concessions to say, well, Opcat might be a way for us to get towards in the direction of what we actually want. So I think some of us who are boots on the ground talking to developers sense that, again, like, this is still very early, but I think miners have not taken an active role in participating in the discussion on Bitcoin's consensus as one of the most important stakeholders. Miners have been fairly removed from this for a while.
Yeah, I was going to kind of double down on that. I think it's a different ecosystem within Bitcoin. They think about things differently. It's you listen to different people, and it's mostly just a lack of information or lack of knowledge thing, where they just need someone that they trust to show them the path from here to CAT. I don't think it's a crazy path. I think it's relatively easy to kind of onboard, but I think it's just finding the right time and place to say, you know, this is Bitcoin season two, and here's what's happening, and here are interesting opportunities for miners in the future, and here's why it's good for everyone, and here are the, you know, how we can mitigate, you know, potential risks. And then it feels like a lot of people are going to be on board, but I think it's just a lack of, this is just my guess. You know, separate ecosystem, not as privy to like Bitcoin as a blockchain, as a software layer.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think especially the miners, they seem like they're very risk off of saying anything public that could be like somewhat controversial, or they're uncertain. And Opcat for a long time was like, it's Pandora's box. You don't know what you're opening. Once you put it on, bad things could happen. And I think it's pretty consensus now that Opcat is nowhere near as bad as people thought it was, especially with the script size limit. So now the question is moving to, like, is this the best example? How do we activate it, etc.? But this might be a good pulse check, because we've been doing this over the past few months now of, like, where are you guys at on soft fork status and what gets pushed in? Because personally, I think that my take is only getting stronger, which is something like Opcat plus a bunch of stuff in 2025. No chance of Opcat only in my mind now, and definitely not in 2024. But like, where are you guys at now?
Ooh, I'll take the inverse. I'll say Opcat only, and I'm just gonna say January 25, just because I don't think it happens this year. I think if we were able to like get simple optimal ideas over the line, we would have added CTV years ago, and I would love CAT plus CTV. I don't think that's going to happen, but it can change pretty quickly. I'm going to say it's probably just CAT. 90% chance we get the soft fork in the next 2 years.
I'm going to go with the most entertaining outcome. And that is January 1st, 2025, just to spite Udi and his 2024 prediction. You know, maybe you wait until it's January in all time zones. So maybe it's January 2nd, 2025, just so there's no possible claim of 2024. And then you do it because everyone wants it and everyone knows that it's good. You don't add any other opcodes because it's just way too complicated. It's like exponential complexity from getting people to come together on a single thing. And so I don't think we get any other opcodes. You know, let's do opcat and then we can do more, you know, the great script restoration can be the next thing that we do, or CTV can be the next thing that we do. Once people see how great cat is, then it's like, oh, and you know, we could do this too. So I think it's just cat. And as the most entertaining outcome, January 2nd, despite Udi. And the best part is Udi still wins because all he wanted was to get cat and Bitcoin, and he's going to get it. And people are going to think that they, you know, they got one on Udi, and Udi's just going to smile and be like, yeah, thanks guys. We're all winning. So that's my date, January 2nd, 2025.
That's a good take. Do you guys not think that this kind of growing great consensus cleanup is going to block any of this?
What's that?
I would be in favor of that. I mean, I'd be fine if I just want any kind of incremental step forwards. So great consensus cleanup is the most conservative, the absolute most no-brainer. I just wonder if, like, if there's enough people who feel as urgent about it.
The consensus cleanup is in
so basically there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of, like, details with Bitcoin Core that almost like custodian type things, like, oh, we do need to increment this integer here. Oh, we need to make sure we need to tighten the bolts here and there. It's like stuff that no one disagrees with any specific thing. They're incredibly minor soft forks. They're just like good housekeeping with how the software itself runs. So I don't know if you want to add any color, Jake.
I mean, that's basically what I know, and that some people say there's like some attack vectors there. So it's like we should handle this sooner than later, but it's not high priority. But then the counter argument is that a lot of these have been known about for a long time, like 5+ years, and they still haven't been exploited. So there's another argument of like, if it was a big deal, it'd be already attacked. So we can keep pushing it down the line kind of thing. But I don't know. It's not a big topic of discussion. I just pick up very small kind of like nuggets on Twitter. So I can't tell, but I think it's going to become a bigger issue as we push towards activation dates, is my pulse on it, but I don't know.
Yeah. Most people have no idea what any of these actually do. And most people are just going to go with what is most branded best, which has as its brand, a sense of surety and conservatism. While cat does not seem that it's going to be, it's conservative, it can be branded as a fairly benign, useful upgrade. So I think, because that's pretty much what Taproot was, like, nobody even knew what Taproot did. I mean, yes, users and devs agreed we should upgrade to Taproot, but like, the pool signaled for it, but largely the miners as an industry had no idea what was going. People producing hash didn't know what Taproot was. The average user had no idea what Taproot was. The average user didn't know that we even had a soft fork in 2022. So, like, I think what's very different this time is that we have people who are very proactive about a specific soft fork. They feel strongly about it, and they will advocate for it. So,
yeah. I don't have any idea when it'll happen. I like that Udi is so, like, it's going to happen in 2024, but he's always saying stuff just to get people riled up. So I don't even know if he actually believes it'll get done in 2024. But something I find, like, from my point of view, all I've seen is all these ordinals people and tech forward, like progressive people, wanting to push the chain forward because they think the chain has other uses than being hard money. And then there's a totally separate group of people who only think it should be hard money and don't think that any upgrade or you can't even call it an upgrade, any changes at all would be beneficial to that, including the dawn of ordinals, which are not a change to the chain at all. It's just giving people a reason to use the chain for something that is other than, but still, I think, supports hard money. They don't even want people to use it differently, let alone soft fork it. So I don't have any idea how it's going to go. I think it's inevitable that it's going to get forked in. It just seems like it to me, because the I hear more people saying they want it than I hear people saying they don't want it at this point. But it's been funny to see how far. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I have to get this out, because I just was listening to the Rust Bitcoin conference on Noster, Zapstream, streamed live from Bitcoin Park in Nashville. It's going on. A bunch of the real developers talking, and Andrew Polstra, as well as a lot of the really smart, sharp Bitcoin folks are there. We're talking on this live stream, and Polstra actually said he believes a lot of the fears of what CAT could do as being creating malincentive and bad things on Bitcoin, he believes that the majority of those will be done anyway, and that we will figure out how to do those without CAT and that's just inevitable. I thought this was pretty crazy, because I've never heard that perspective before, and I don't even know how to evaluate it, but I thought that, to me, hearing that, I was like, that's it's not very optimistic. It's almost just a fatalist prediction to say maybe that's why he's very pro-CAT. So
humans will find a way, whether it's the hard way or the easy way, to do the thing that we're afraid of, no matter what.
Yeah, and I actually heard that you could, like, flip bits or something to simulate CAT in the most inefficient way or something. But I don't know. We'll see about that.
One, I mean, since you brought up Andrew Polstra, just one really deep dive from the Bitcoin conference. Starknet put on an event with Bitcoin Layers. Very small event, but like very, very high signal. You know, brilliant, brilliant people were there speaking. Andrew Polstra spoke. Wei King spoke about how he got the ZK proof verified on Signet using CAT. Anyway, when Andrew Polstra talked, he talked about a way that you can take a Bitcoin private key and you can essentially hash it in some kind of way. So you now have, like, let's say, five different private key secret shares. It's not like, you know, words. It's just like, you know, strings, just random characters. You give those to your five friends. And then without using a computer or a device at all, you can just use paper. He has like a notebook, and you can use his notebook to take those, you know, random hashes you gave to your friends, and you can recreate your private key in its entirety without using any software. So it's this like incredible paper book. He has like these circle like charts, essentially, to do like really crazy addition and division, and all these crazy lookup tables. And so it's like the super, super Bitcoin nerd way to store your private key when you don't want to trust hardware wallets. You don't want to trust anyone else. You know, you give it out to like five or 10 of your friends, and you only need a threshold of your friends. You don't need all of them. So give it out to, you know, 10 friends and say you need a threshold of five. The friends don't know who they are. You know, you give them some metal plated, you know, secret key thing. And then you can just use the paper completely to get your private key back. And then just in the off chance, you know, you're on some abandoned island with no internet, you can use a ham radio to interact with the Blockstream API to actually send a Bitcoin transaction. And so you don't even need anything. You just need a ham radio and the workbook and your friends, and you're good to go to use Bitcoin. It was the greatest nerd talk for a Bitcoiner. It was fabulous.
And they're going to be doing more of those. So I will be looking. Keep your eyes peeled, because those are going to be Bitcoin Nerd Central over the next few months.
Is that
It was so good.
I just don't know, what is the purpose? Like, is this for like when the world goes to shit and we're Bitcoin in apocalypse mode? Like, Bitcoin is still gonna be good. You could just send it over ham.
It's specifically for the Bitcoin nerd enthusiast that wants ultimate security. That's it. It's not for the normie, it's not for the normal Bitcoin user, it's not for the advanced Bitcoin user. It's for the nerdy Bitcoin enthusiast that craves ultimate security with their private key.
That's amazing.
The people with bunkers and like cans of tuna and gallons of water.
And ham radios, yeah.
Ham radios.
I'm waiting for the smoke signals version so I could see if it's yellow, well, then pink,
they're
then white.
They're just bytes. They reduce it down to ones and zeros. It could work.
Exactly. exactly. Okay. The only other topic I have on my docket is the mining situation, where we're like at crazy high hash rate and miners aren't making stuff at all. We can cover that, or because we're still only a half hour in, we can go for an hour, we can cut it short. But like any other topics before we use the one last I have in the quiver that you find interesting, you want to table.
Kicking around in my head.
What you got, Donnie?
It's mostly ordinal stuff and one question about Noster or comment about Noster. Where do we want to go? Do we want to go to Noster or Ordinals? Where
do
we want
to go? Do it, Donnie.
Yeah, Noster.
Noster? Cool. So I got one of those pills that you got, Charlie, one of the little metal things with the seed phrase in it. And this was my first time making an NPUB. Yeah, making
exclusive.
A Noster account. And I don't have any idea how to use it. And I keep on like reactivating it every time I open a browser to use it in again. And then it like broadcasts that I've reactivated it. Now my account is just like a wall of reactivations, and I don't really know how to follow people, and I don't know how to get people to follow me. So, like, is there anything worth talking about here, or is this something I should privately explore and figure out?
Definitely is. I think Noster is dope. I actually think Noster and Ordinals pair incredibly well together. I did an interview with Zach Meyer of Ord.io. He is one of, I think, the greatest cross-section of Noster enthusiast and Ordinals builder. I think one of the issues with Noster is that the network effect is pretty limited to just a certain type of Bitcoiner, and then other people who abuse open permissionless relay systems. You can imagine that type of user. So there's not like a lot. There's like, it's the same reason you haven't signed up for other social media sites, because like there's nobody you know on there. But I think that could change, because at a structural level, it's a fantastic, like, really cool, like, communications protocol. And I think it allows a lot of the cool tricks that we actually want with ordinals to pass signatures back and forth to be done at a relay level. You can make it really simple. You can get a plugin for your browser to sign into various Noster clients. So you can do one of those. There's, like, various pages you need to, like, look up. People's public addresses, their NPUB, and there's various aggregator sites to say, here's what you can do. One of my favorite things is to log into one of these like streaming services on Noster and see who's like streaming video games and just tip them sats. So I think Noster is so, so cool. It's just one of those things where it requires more like brain cycles to happen to keep on top of things. And that's one of the reasons why I'm not super active on it. But I would love if the ecosystems, like the broader Bitcoin and crypto ecosystems, used more of Noster, not just this like narrow, hardcore Bitcoin audience.
I'm going to keep poking around it, because it does feel valuable and like useful for whenever everything else breaks, which feels inevitable to some degree, or like the exploits are different on Noster than they are on Twitter, because like someone can turn off an account on Twitter and like no one can on Noster, kind of like you said. Something else I noticed about Noster is that someone is running like an eBay on it called Shopster. Kind of an interesting concept. And I don't understand how protections or insurance work with regard to that. And I'm sure there are their own struggles, but I bumped into a booth on the showroom floor where they were running an eBay on Noster, which, thoughts on that?
And there's really good privacy, like after the Samurai wallet and the other coin joins got yanked from availability to US customers, that really limits what you can do to coordinate coin join type activities. And I will just shout it out. There's a guy working on a Noster powered coin join called Joinster, and I'm a huge financial supporter of it. So that's a personal pet project of mine.
Yep.
One more quick plug.
Go ahead.
Yeah, one more quick plug on the Noster ordinal side. OpenOrdX, as well as, what was it called? Deezy's Place or Danny's Place? It was Deezy's Place, I think. Like way back when he did the Ordinals Marketplace. Both of them, when you list something, you're essentially signing your end of a PSBT. It would post that partially signed transaction to Noster. So it's essentially an open Ordinals Marketplace at that point. Open meaning anyone can see the PSBT, anyone can go in and sign it, anyone can see it. This is very different than current Ordinals marketplaces. Right now, Ordinals marketplaces using PSBTs are actually a very centralizing force. on Ordinals marketplaces, which is funny because you, it enables you to do atomic swaps. But it's centralizing because when you sign, they keep that in their own database. Liquidity, specifically for Ordinals, your marketplace is essentially only as good as your liquidity, and your liquidity is essentially a host of partially signed Bitcoin transactions. And so you're not incentivized to share those with the world. And so you end up with a closed wall marketplace like Magic Eden. Magic Eden's definitely king of Ordinals and other things. And so it's interesting to think through how Noster could facilitate like an open decentralized PSBT marketplace. It's hard to imagine. There's no real incentive for collaboration here on the marketplace side to actually make it open. But it's possible, like, you know, marketplaces have integrated this before, and, you know, maybe in the future, you know, some catalyst will come around kind of pushing people to this more open PSBT marketplace model, but still, you know, to be seen whether that is going to be a reality.
Yeah, it's one of those ways, like, a lot of, well, right now, one of the main narratives is ordinal sniping and the dynamics between exchanges and the particular types of signatures in a partially signed Bitcoin transaction, because these are solvable issues. They just require more user interactivity and a degraded user experience. Yep. And at some point, there's a high possibility. I'm not going to make this prediction, but there's a possibility that that certain types of exchanges for these Ordinals assets may move to Noster because, like, there's a certain segment which doesn't care about the high frequency trading. They care less about user experience. They just care about secure transmission of these assets back and forth, and that's the scenario I could see happening. Yeah, I just spent the past couple days going down the rabbit hole of different sig hash flags, but that's a different topic.
Yep.
You could just absolutely throw a PSBT up. Like, you could use the mempool as a marketplace, right? Like, you don't even really need, all you need is a place to browse and view all these things. But, like, you could just throw a PSBT up at 1 cent per V-byte. Whoever speeds it up wins it, right?
Like, that's the person. And we're already there. Like, that's what Magisat does, and Satsflow is coming soon, but they're coming soon with theirs. Cool. So, yeah, totally agree. Yeah, it's funny. I was sitting here, I was trying to, like, write down points to touch on Noster, and you guys just kept, like, covering them. I was like, all right, next one, cover that, next one, cover them. So, absolute bangers. Yeah, joins to super, like, dope.
It means we're on the same page, which I love. It means we're thinking about the same things.
Yeah, I will say one thing that I'm waiting for is, because I use Primal, which is like an iPhone client. It's good. It gets the job done. I just hate having to manage another private key. Like, it makes my head hurt. I got to write it down. I'm going to probably fucking lose it. Like, it's annoying. So, like, the way that BitMask does it, which is a wallet that you probably haven't heard of because it's mainly
RGB,
focused on
RGB. I love BitMask.
RGB. Shout out to Gideon. But yeah, so when you spin up a wallet, it does like L1, Lightning, RGB, and an NPub. So you get access to all those in like one fell swoop. And so I would love if when you spin up a wallet in Xver, so you import, it prompts you to do an NPub, and then you can use Xver to go into these things. Like, that's the big friction, because I don't want to have to download another app and manage that. It should be seamless in the wallet I'm already using.
Yep.
Well, I don't know if Bob or Jake, you guys have insight to this, but Zach was telling me they're all derived from the same, like, cryptography curve, elliptical curve, and whatever. So, like, your private key for your Noster, your NPub, actually corresponds to a Bitcoin address. It's like, you can have this Bitcoin address, which is the same, unlinked by your same Noster key. So,
and vice versa. Yeah. Meaning that every Bitcoin wallet you have also has an NPub attached to it. You just haven't looked at it yet. Like, it couldn't be one and not the other, right?
That's a question for Zach. I don't know.
Yeah, I know in some cases wallets use different curves. And if they use different curves, then you get different wallets from the same private key. And I know that even in the case of Bitcoin wallets, you have some that use, what is it called? The derivation path. Some wallets use different derivation paths, and so similarly, your private key is going to result in a different account depending on the derivation path you use. And so there is some incompatibility there across services, but I don't know what that looks like for all services and products in the Bitcoin ecosystem. There's likely a lot the same because, you know, we all came from the same kind of background history on the Bitcoin side, but I don't know. There could be some crazy ones.
Yeah. It'd also be cool if we could find like just an auto reposter from Twitter to my NPub so that, that you can kind of build a network effect that way.
There is that. I used to have that linked. Yeah. And it broke like a year back, but I used to do that.
Okay. It probably broke because the Twitter API is a nightmare to use these days.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Like super expensive. It's like $100 a month for a single user license. And then if you want like a corporate license, it's something crazy, like $10,000 a month or something like that. Or I don't know. That's just crazy.
Freaking Daddy Elon. What else you got, Donnie?
I had two things about ordinals. One of them was that I have been practicing proper privacy and security and making lots of wallets. And then I decided to exacerbate that and start making anti-Sybil wallets to look like even more different people, both for the sake of privacy and for the sake of airdrop farming, which has now worked twice, even before airdrop season has arrived. Epic. And these knock or no ordinary kind cards. I had an insane amount of eligible wallets, which also took up most of my day yesterday claiming these things. So it's become like a blessing and a curse. Like I'm able to do more of this, but now I like feel like I have to do more of this stuff. So I started feeding. I made one new wallet, one new seed, and I spun up like 35 addresses from it. And I funded them all through not mixers, but exchanges that sort of like act like mixers. And started buying assets, not just from marketplaces, but from my own other wallets so that they're not like I'm not sending from wallet to wallet. You know, it's making a complicated transaction. So I have this like, I don't know, I'm trying to hit all of the, let's see if this is alpha. This might just be stupid. I'm trying to hit all the previous airdrop criteria. Like, are there more than two non-text inscriptions? Is there a runes balance? Are there Magic Eden sales and or purchases? Just trying to make sure all these wallets have the criteria and that there's at least one inscription of some sort of merit in it, like a sub 100K or a sub 10K, maybe a Bitcoin frog, something that like people think exists, not just some swill from somewhere, ever. But it also prompted me to dig through this backlog of like triple O or quadruple O zero down to like $4 generative art that no one ever grasped or grappled onto for some reason that I now just have piles of because it was like 0.00005. A wall of it. And I just bought like tons of them because I think they're cool, just genuinely. And I don't care if I ever sell them. So I ended up getting all this stuff and I cared more this time about No Ordinary Cards, the control, the Seize Control project, because I was able to claim so many of these things that I've been playing the heck out of this game, which is now the third thing in the Ordinals are dead phase. And tell me to shut up if you have something to say in between.
Keep going.
We saw Aeons get some volume and start to like grab a little bit of a community. And finally, that was like the first bastion of hope in the there is, you know, people were willing to take a risk, let's say. Then Frontline from Alexis Andre, that Osura drop from OCM, there was a generative art drop and nobody really got it because you can't view it because Magic Eden doesn't really show things properly and neither does Xverse. You have to like go into Genie Data or ordinals.com, which by the way, the ordinals.com, whatever they upgraded, it works super, super well now. So you can see these things and people are like taking a risk on them. And then No Ordinary Cards came out. People minted them. People are trading them. And there's a huge card game that goes along with it that people are actually playing. And there's like a two delayed reveal mechanism thing where it's like a condom that you mint. You can rip the corner off it and see what's in it. Or you can rip the entire thing off and see the entire PFP that comes with it. I just think there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on right now. And we're seeing people return to caring about art and games and like...
Okay, hold on. Two things real quick, because you just blew my brain up, Donnie. Because, like, we all have our expertise, and for the longest time, you've been like, I'm the newest here, I'm still learning. You just went, like, full giga brain for, like, 5 minutes straight. So that was crazy. But, like, when you started, you were like, I've been playing with some wallet stuff, you know, doing proper privacy, which probably means, like, no address reuse, stuff like that. And then you said Sybil resistance in the wallets. And I've never thought about that, so I can almost promise that most of the people listening are like, I kind of heard that word, but what does that mean in the wallet? So, like, could you do a 60-second breakdown? What does Sybil resistance mean at, like, the wallet level?
Totally. Anti-Sybil, so, like, if you look up Sybil in Wikipedia, it's someone's last name who is diagnosed. It was like one of the first people to be diagnosed with multiple personality disorder. So civil resistance, practicing civil resistant practices just means trying to look like you are not, like those wallets are not linked back to you. You don't have multiple personalities. Each wallet is its own separate thing. So to do that, you can feed a wallet anonymously with Bitcoin that no one knows where it came from because it went through some sort of a mixer. And then you are interacting with that wallet by buying things from a marketplace. And you feed a different wallet from different Bitcoin, different source, so that those two wallets, even though they're both controlled by you, they don't interact with each other, nor anything that can source be directed back to you. So like transferring an ordinal from one of your wallets to another makes it a cluster that is clearly you. So there's like 100 wallets I have that could probably be bubble mapped back together to just be me, meaning that is not anything that is a Sybil resistant drop. We'll see those 100 wallets as one person. But anything that's a Sybil resistant drop, we'll see these other 35 that I made that are totally Sybil resistant, meaning they've been fed individually and not interacted with each other, nor anything that I've previously interacted with. Those are all viewed as 35 different people to any software that would be scanning for, like, you know, is this all linked traceable back to one person? So bubble mapping hasn't really been a thing on Bitcoin. It's possible. People are doing it with runes at this point. I don't know if anyone is going to try to do an airdrop that's actually going to look through bubble mapping. I mean, you might have to once we're really busy, but it might be after this next euphoric phase. So this might all be for nothing, but it might be for something. So civil resistance is just
making sure
your wallets never touch each other.
I would say to everyone listening, take the cue from Donnie. Apparently it's time to prep for airdrop season 2 on ordinals. Now's a good time. Fee rates are low.
Too late. Donnie's the most forward-looking indicator. And what I also love is that gamifying the ordinals like degen experience can also occasionally align with like good practices and good privacy practices. And I love that. It doesn't always, sometimes it's the opposite, but like I love to see when it does. And you don't see other Bitcoiners who just DCA in the same wallet all the time, like spend days moving their assets and preparing them and staging them in the most optimal way. Like that's something Donnie does, and Donnie is the new wave, the modern man's Bitcoiner.
I'm gonna get a t-shirt made.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, airdrop farming has been, like I said, I've been telling everybody I care about this. I put it like an alpha post in the Femoji server and dropped it in a couple other places, knowing full well that no one is going to do this because it requires time. But what everybody has in the bear market when they don't, well, not bear, like an ordinals winter or whatever, when there's no liquidity moving, nobody can sell things to get money to buy things. So like, what do you have? You only have time. So I figured to tell all these people who have a whole bunch of free time and not a lot of money to do anything with, it's a pretty cheap way to like just buy stuff out of your own wallets and see if it does anything. See if you can understand Bitcoin better by doing this, you know?
That's awesome. Yep. I feel like you're like 4 weeks away from like learning Bitcoin script and starting to like spin up shit and code and like be a tackle wizard.
Books. I mean, I would really like to do stuff like that. Maybe that's a cycle away. We'll see.
I was going to say he's 4 weeks away from Gen Wealth. Just wait till, maybe, you know, someone's going to see what's happening on ordinals and it's going to be exciting. And they're prepping right now to do some massive airdrop to grab attention and interest. And Donnie's going to just absolutely destroy.
And that's when I will retire to become a Bitcoin developer.
That's why you moved to Puerto Rico, baby.
Before airdrop season. Can't do it after because it doesn't really matter. It doesn't help you do it.
Yeah.
So I
just, Donnie, what's your
touch on all that?
What's your prediction on the beginning of airdrop season 2 on ordinals? I'll call it airdrop season 2 because we kind of had an airdrop season 1 a while back.
One, yeah.
And so now, you know, we haven't really seen anything lately that big. So yeah, I'm curious when you're obviously preparing for greatness. So I'm curious.
I'm preparing because I know that there is a market full of willing participants who will jump on anything that you give them to chew on and use the heck out of it. And I know that people know that. The only things that I've heard so far are that there are layer twos and protocols and like sequencers that are, in fact, there were some people we were talking to the other day, Bob, who are thinking about a way to get ordinals people engaged in something that they're providing a service for, but they can't airdrop based on something that has already happened. because they haven't done anything yet. So they want to do an airdrop that is going to promote use. And I think we're going to see a lot of layer twos doing airdrops to ordinals degens who have a lot of like active wallets with any motion, you know, just to get
these
protocols that don't exist.
All yet. Of these layer twos are trying to bootstrap liquidity and users, and airdrops are the proven mechanism to do that. The ordinals community has demonstrated that they are the most easily activatable user base and identifiable user base from just a user behavior standpoint. And you can also evaluate like how much money these people have. So like it is just this giant group of people waiting to be activated. It seems to me like this is a very, very good play going forward. The layer twos and various schemes like that will be trying to dangle things out in front of you and to get you to use their platform. Obviously, disclosure, buyer beware, go to Bitcoin layers to do proper, you know, review of like trust assumptions, but also go get that bag. Like it's the season for that.
Wait, so let me make sure I get this. So we've seen point season where everyone's doing a bunch of off-chain stuff and then eventually get an airdrop on that the chain is most connected to. So like Liquidium did this, they launched their token last week. L2s are doing it. But you guys are saying that you're going to see point systems on the L2s that airdrop back down to ordinals or runes. Is that what you're saying?
I think they're going to airdrop to previous use of ordinals, runes, and BRC websites, marketplaces, balance, even just carrying a balance in your wallet. Mm. Because I think there are so many. Okay, there's one Liquidium, right? And there's no competition for it. So everybody was using Liquidium, and they said, how do we get more people to use it, even though they're already doing it? Promise them something later. If there are like 16 L2s that are all launching off-chain manners of trading things, they have to engage the user before the user knows it exists. And I think that a huge airdrop, so it's a stunning 200,000 something or wallet airdrop full of like, I don't even know what it would be full of. It could be runes, probably not BRCs, maybe some ordinals, something like just discount codes. I don't really know what it would be. But it feels like you have to get their attention in order to get them to use it at this point because there's going to be a lot more competition in space, in my head.
I love this thesis, the thesis that these layer twos are going to be competing for users. They have big budgets, and they can't figure out how to activate them. They're going to jeet those budgets on-chain and fill our bags. I am a believer in this thesis now. I don't know when it'll happen, but it's going to happen. My spidey senses are tingling right now.
There's so many ways you can hack it too, because you can, especially once we get some decent bridging, like airdrop 100 runes on L1, but if you bridge it over, you unlock 900 more or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Huge. Right. Huge. Yeah. That would be. I'd use that for sure. Because money.
Yeah,
because
it would prompt people to do it. Like you get the drop, knowing full well it would be 10x if you just use this service that it's pointing at. That's a big deal.
Yep. I love it. Okay, last topic. Let's touch on the mining thing, because we've had the halving a few months ago. And yeah, I'm seeing reports of like all-time hash rate, maybe all-time low profitability. So mining is now dead as well. So like give us the overview.
Okay, I'll do it here. Fine. I know you want to know this. Well, here's the sad story. we made the decision to decommission the entirety of our off-grid operations. That's my partnership, Nakamoto. We have several megawatts on grid. We are standing down all of our generator contracts, releasing those. We'll take a cash deal because we released them because they've been trying to get out of that contract for a long time. So we'll do that, pull our rigs, flip the fleet, redeploy some of it onto a new on-grid site. But like that's a little window into the life of an operator. I did not want to do this. I've worn off-grid mining as quite a badge of honor. But this week and next are the transition period for my own company here in Oklahoma to no longer have any more active mining out at gas wells. The pain points, Bitcoin profitability, but then also just like generation. What's funny is natural gas is really, really low right now. So on-grid rates in Oklahoma are some of the lowest they've ever been. So it's this interesting mechanic where, yes, it's cheap off-grid, just power, like fuel pricing, but on-grid, because natural gas is such a high mix for the Oklahoma grid, depending on the utility, it's very, very low. So I don't like it. There's a lot of folks like me. You see this, like, unless you have the new efficiency rigs, the new tier rigs, At most power rates, you are barely break even. All in. Again, this is all in costs, depreciating, operating costs, insurance, all that stuff, not just your power rate. So, yeah, man, there's your boots on the ground, minor capitulation story. It's me. I stayed up to like 4 a.m. on Saturday night DJing, drove back home, 8-hour drive, then spent all day Monday in like a Nakamoto war room basically figuring out how to extricate ourselves from these contracts. So I don't fucking sleep. I just fucking work all the time, and I'm tired of doing Bitcoin mining stuff, and I'm trying to get into the ward cell game, sort of decommissioning all the off-grid stuff.
Charlie Spears, world's greatest Bitcoin moderator, world's greatest DJ. Sorry, Donnie, go ahead real quick.
Yeah, I was just going to say I have a very different experience. Well, not very different. It's a very similar experience, although a different skin in the game with mine. Wait, is the rain about the number one Bitcoin DJ? Bob, are you saying he's not the number one Bitcoin DJ?
I was giving Charlie a moment of silence for his recent loss, getting out of his contracts, restructuring things. It just sounds like a hard thing that he had to do. So I was giving him some sad rain, some smooth jazz, some
now if you come to Oklahoma, I can show you the bones that we've still, I can show you here's where it used to be. yeah, that's all. So
I have some miners with hashlings. I have like 3.6 petahash, I think, running, and 92%. The cost is 92% of the revenue at this point, and this is the worst it's been so far. I think the power rate we got is pretty reasonable, and if this was my living, I would shut it down for sure, but since it's just kind of an experiment, I'm just letting it roll with the idea that this is probably the worst it's going to get, I think anyway, because our power rate's not changing, but the price of Bitcoin hopefully will outpace the hash rate increase. We'll see. I'll come back with that, over the coming months, I'll come back and tell you if it worked or not. But so far, I have not paid off the cost of the miners, clearly, because it's only been like 6 or 8 months or something. But it's in the process of doing that. So from like a consumer mining standpoint, this is doing enough that I don't need to turn it off and cut my losses. But if this were my profession, I probably would have done what Charlie did.
Interesting. Is there... like from the industry perspective, is there fears, like assuming Bitcoin doesn't go up for another 9 months, 12 months, we just kind of like stable coin it across for 12 more months. Like, is this a fear of like smaller shops shut down, get bought up by other bigger entities, it becomes a centralizing force? Like what's the fears here?
So right now the big entities are acquiring medium to medium small sites. That's happening right now. It's the big guys have a very, very deep infinite checkbook. They are raising money through structures called ATMs, where they go to the public markets, get a bunch of money. What's interesting is that, and we actually talk about this in our in one of our recent mining pods, if you want to go down that rabbit hole, we are seeing differentiation among the public mining company strategies. The pure play miners, the vertically integrated miners, the mullet miners, which incorporate some AI or alternative data center model, and there's hosting to full stack, whatever. But what's interesting is some of the miners who have done we're going to put mining Bitcoin on our balance sheet and have been raising money through the public markets have just posted net losses for the quarter. And this is interesting because I would put Riot and Marathon in that category. And then I put like a CleanSpark and Bitdeer and Bitfarms in the pure play, hyper efficient, hyper scalable model. And, depending on your view of Bitcoin price over the next year, you now have a playbook for betting on these different types of mining strategies in the public markets. This has not been seen before. I think in the world of like Bitcoin mining equities trading, shout out to the mining mafia out there. It's like a whole Twitter group. In the world of like Bitcoin mining equities trading, now you have a bet you can make. And so I think this is very, very interesting to be betting on Bitcoin equities. So there's your insight to that.
Oh,
beautiful. I think that is a great place to end it with a little nugget of wisdom. We just crossed an hour. So for those listening, your homework is to search what is a mullet miner, come for a deep dive, and then post about it on Twitter, tag Charlie, tag Blockspace Media. But yeah,
wait, homework. One. Homework number two: create 5 Sybil resistant wallets, a la Donnie, and put all of your favorite historically significant ordinals, runes, BRC20s in it. Interact with all the right protocols, and you know, get prepped for airdrops, and then tag Donnie, and shout out to him for being awesome. Have
one more nugget: don't use mixers, because mixers are going to be first on the chopping block. Use exchanges that also mix. You have to move things from Bitcoin to Solana, Solana back to Bitcoin in order to get them from wallet to wallet. But that extra step, I think, will save you 2 years of regulation. Regulatory hammer dropping.
The how-to guide is coming soon. Thanks, guys. All right.